Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hello and welcome to Meet the Founder, a new series within But Why Podcast. My name is Clemmie Telford, and before I began out on social media, my career was in advertising as an agency creative director and later as a creative strategist at Facebook and Instagram. I have a fascination with brands, how and why they exist, and the stories of the people behind them. Meet the Founder is my opportunity to marry my love of honest conversations about tricky subjects with my curiosity about brands. It's business chat, but a bit nosier.
When you look at a backline, you look at options, you should see like a level playing field. Mm-hmm. And at the moment, you know, the alcohol-free drinks will be tucked in some dark corner or in a fridge, and you have a 150 spirit bottles.
Today, I'm talking to Jamie Wild of Ferragaya. Have I said that right?
You have. You've nailed it.
Yes.
It's great to be here. Thank you for having me.
Jamie and I have done a lot of like preamble chat, like on the way up in the lift and in reception. And now I'm going to try and shoehorn that into our conversation because we've covered some really interesting stuff. So give me the elevator pitch for the brand, how it came to exist, why it exists in the world, and also drill in a little bit to that interesting name.
Ferragaya is the original free spirit. It's really on a mission to redefine how people perceive and look at alcohol-free drinking. We are opening up a category of free spirits, which is really a positive statement about what we are rather than what we're not. So much of the category is defined by what it's trying to avoid, mimicking the taste of alcohol or using alcohol in the process. And we believe if you're going to really embrace not drinking, then you should first get rid of what you're trying to avoid. So Ferragaya never touches alcohol. It's not mimicking the taste of alcohol. And that's really the foundation on which we build this really sort of interesting, complex, satisfying drink. And then sort of going on to the other points that you mentioned, the definition of Ferragaya is Wild Earth. It's Latin and Greek. And the brand is, and the lifestyle of the brand sort of really exists in a sort of sense of when we enter wild places, that familiar sense of, you know, this is somewhere that we've come from, somewhere that our bones know, almost that our minds don't, because increasingly we grow further and further away from nature in our urban busy lives. And so Ferragaya Wild Earth is all about taking a trip back, and everyone will have their own idea and their mind's eye about what Wild Earth is. It might be the beach, forest, mountains, but that sense of grounding and almost sort of comforting insignificance that you get when you're in these wild places is the experience that we want to give the drinkers of Ferragaya through that wild expression that we've got, because we believe that's the person that we should bring into the world and the interactions that we have. And ultimately, it's a sort of a self-empowerment thing and how to get more meaning out of, you know, the life that we have, which is obviously really precious.
I actually love that. As you know, and as we've spoken off mic, I don't drink, I haven't drunk for coming up to 4 years. And so much of what I love about not drinking is that real sense of being grounded and of clarity. And prior to not drinking, the only time I ever felt that was in nature, that real sense of perspective, a sense of being able to see life for what it is. And so I really love the fact that that is what you've tapped into, and that isn't, for me, sobriety isn't life without, it is absolutely life with in every sense.
And it's really not about what you're giving up, it's about what you're gaining. And actually what you're giving up is far less than what you're gaining. And as you know through what you've done over the last 4 years, is that you can, it's the sort of the freedom that you have and the way in which you can build your own self-confidence in social settings, knowing that you don't need to have the crutch of alcohol for you to sort of fit in. Mm-hmm. And it, you know, it opens up, it's sort of positive. And that empowerment I see is like the new frontier of socializing and the way in which people can get more out of these precious moments that they have outside of busy working lives when they're with, you know, loved ones, family, socializing, etc. So I think it's really exciting.
I'm interested again in what this category has looked like, the history of it, when it, you know, how you see it tracking over the last few years and where you see it going.
Yeah, so we're in, well, technically alcohol-free spirits. We really see ourselves as being the original because of what we're doing, the original free spirit, sorry. And that really kicked off 5-6 years ago, maybe more now, with Seedlip, which has sort of spearheaded that, got the first mover sort of into the space and has done amazing things for opening up that category. Ever since then, and as there's been more and more hype about people changing their drinking habits and alcohol-free drinks being more than just a really sugary elderflower or a mix of mango and sort of pineapple juice, etc., loads of products and brands have come into the space. And I'll leave like beer and wine to one side, but there's really, you know, you've got fermented products, you've got macerated products, you've got distilled products like Ferragaya, you know, you've got nootropic sort of functional options. And so there's a massive sort of, there's a huge amount of different options in the space right now. So like it's a mile wide, and really just an inch deep because it's in its infancy as a category. And so the consumer, I think, has been introduced to brands like Seedlip, for example. And I think through, in terms of spirits, as bigger brands have sort of cottoned on to the opportunity in the market, namely like Gordon's and Tanqueray, people have now sort of moved on to like these quite mainstream, quite, I'd say sort of safer options, like a direct mimic of the alcoholic version and from a brand that they already know. But, you know, as I say, I think that's a stepping stone in the middle of the river to the promised land, which is, you know, free spirits and for, you know, for what we're doing. And this is, you know, our bet is that, you know, we're really looking inward, like inwardly establishing ourselves, doing, creating distillery, you know, growing our own botanicals, creating sort of real depth to our story so that when the consumer has the confidence to be able to sort of really look outwards from direct alcohol mimics, then Ferragaya is sort of there as really the benchmark for quality in that space. So that evolution is sort of midway at the moment. But it's, you know, it's a small category still. There's a lot of talk about it, and but people are sort of still making their mind up on the whole as to what alcohol free means to them and where it fits, the moments it fits and what they have in that. So in that interim, that's why the safer sort of options are typically drunk.
Yeah, just it's an easy conversion, isn't it? But yeah. You're so right. It's like if you've chosen to move away from alcohol, the chances are, for whatever reason, be that complicated or not, the idea of just mimicking the thing that you've moved away from is a strange place to find yourself, but that is often what you're confronted with.
You see that in was smoking or veganism, and the idea of a vegan sausage is sort of still in between for me. I would, there's got to be more than that. And so that's the same. Not that I'm comparing Ferragaya to vegan sausage, it's quite a different thing.
Has your route to market been to consumer, or are you trying to go via businesses?
So that's been a bit of a journey since we started 3.5 years ago, just before COVID. You know, co-founder and I really have our sort of experience in hospitality and off-trade working with bigger drinks, alcoholic drinks brands. And so we set out really just to work with some of the great hotels, bars, restaurants up and down the UK to establish the brand, to educate people about like what it's about. And, you know, we got off to a really great start and it was really well received. But then of course, like so many businesses, we're sort of forced to pivot really quickly in March 2020. And we became an online brand, for which was, you know, just clambering to try and get a Shopify website up and getting all the Facebook advertising stuff and putting out some adverts. And fortunately in that time, the category was still small enough and there wasn't that much competition. So digital was, you know, was pretty good for us and saw us through what was, you know, pretty treacherous period for many businesses if they were reliant on hospitality or like retail events and so international export. So in our, you know, we existed on digital for about a year and then it started to change as things opened up again. And really through then, you know, we're very events and off trade, sorry, which is retail. But now, you know, we're really in this space of, we do, our big opportunities are really in hospitality. So the on-trade like venues where we see like food led venues that have great cocktail offerings, selling great rate of sale on Ferragaya. And there's some really great international opportunities opening up as well, which is, so growing towards the light is what we're told. You know, we've got to make sure that we've got to focus our limited resources to these areas that we see growth in. And those are our points at the moment.
I was going to ask you about the challenges, like how it, to be in a category that's growing is really exciting, but there's still quite an education piece. And you're also, I would imagine, and correct me if I'm wrong, you're still trying to create your consumer. It's not obvious who you haven't got a, probably that clearer image, or do you have a
very... Well, yeah, I've got Leo, Janie and Serena, who are sort of character muses that I've developed. One of them is sort of like a free-spirited character. The other one is really like more of a change maker. And then the third one is sort of the assertive and confident one. And I think their like reasons are to love Ferragaya. You know, Leo would be like, loves the, to still to be different, this idea of like getting more or there's new. With Janie, it's sort of more about this free spirit category and, you know, the B Corp certification and that, that eco element in terms of what we're doing. Then Serena would be like, it's alcohol free and it's good. So it's going to help in these moments when I don't want to drink. So, I mean, but that's, there's the, that's a real sort of distillation of 3.5 years of trial and error, basically. And I have no doubt that that, those character muses are going to continue to evolve and develop, but always like the focus on the consumer is so important, and understanding who the consumer is, why they would drink or engage with Ferragaya, and then when would they have it? It's just a constant battle to try and find that, because you're right, such a complicated category. It's a complex product that is new, and so all of this means that there's a lot of education to get across. And that's something that, you know, we've struggled with in the category where, you know, alcohol-free gins, for example, are very popular because it's an easy one to understand. So the comms battle of like how to really communicate yourself and how to sell yourself is has been a really big one and will continue to be a real focus.
Yeah, I guess... you're very much, as we touched on, you're representative of that free spirit, which is, if you're stepping outside the mainstream, which is exactly what you're doing, and this is what I find, you're trying to do things differently consciously, that of course that can feel hard, because as humans we always want to get pulled back towards the norm of what's common and what's understood.
As a like founder of a business as well, you don't get the validation of the like hockey stick uptick in sales, because, and something that, you know, I've learned, it's just taken so much more time and it will take longer. I continue to take longer to establish and educate people on Ferragaya, and I'm accepting of that. I mean, my strategy needs to reflect that, but I believe that that longer term image, you know, vision for what I have for what we have for the brand really represents something that is right and really true and honest. And I think, you know, alcohol-free drinks shouldn't be defined by alcohol, but it also, when you look at a back bar and you look at options, you should see like a level playing field. Mm-hmm. And at the moment, you know, the alcohol-free drinks will be tucked in some dark corner or in a fridge, and you have a, you know, 150 spirit bottles, like all looking fantastic and really interesting. It's like no wonder that people find it hard to make a choice for themselves when it's just like a onslaught of just alcohol, alcohol, alcohol. And so that balancing is really key. And I think when you've got confidence in who you are and you're not being apologetic and you're not being defensive, it's, well, it sort of breeds confidence in that. And I think hopefully real loyalty in the mission.
It's something you touched on there, and it's something that actually during these conversations I've been having, this idea that we get sold very aggressive growth strategies, and actually for all sorts of reasons for all different brands, that actually can't or isn't the right approach.
Yeah, and it's cruel because I think most entrepreneurial people are quite optimistic, and so it's forecasting is, you know, it's sort of brutal because you think I can, you know, this is going to change the world, or you've got to have a little bit of that crazy to drive you to do it in the first place, to keep on fighting and pushing and persisting with it. So so it's a hard lesson, but it's that sort of reminder of, you know, you've got to respect it once it's there and acknowledge it, and then just get on your strategy and work out how, you know, one, you sort of spend the resources that you have correctly, and you can navigate a competitive landscape filled with a lot of people with far more money to spend than you, to really sort of find some truth and eke out an existence in the category. But I think where we feel really lucky is that in one of the original books, business books by Jack Trout that we read, Bill and I, was called Differentiate or Die. And it's all these laws of marketing, which, you know, and I think those lessons that we've taken on board, certainly from like differentiation, have been really valuable to us. And they are starting to become even more valuable now as people are becoming more educated on the space and looking beyond options of just alcohol-free gin for...
Yeah, and you hope actually that differentiator piece is often retrofitted. As I said, I worked in advertising and I've had a lot of alcohol briefs, you know, land on my table, and you look at the brand positioning, like this is a load of things that have been made up retrospectively to try and give a brand some meaning, whereas the meaning is there, you know, from the beginning for you.
Yeah, and we're so proud of what we've built. Yeah, Bill and I, you know, we've now got a small team which really brings this sort of greater force of energy and like teamwork together, which has been incredible. And, you know, I hope to continue to build that. But it's, you take these choices at the expense of, you know, there's a lot of other brands that have just gone for quick volume in just package up the most consumer-friendly thing, short-term solution, and put as much money behind it as possible. Whilst it's like we've built something real, something that we can now open the doors to our distillery, welcome people in, and really show everything that goes into Ferragut, all the work, the whole idea behind it. And that's a benchmark in the alcohol-free spirit category, the no-no category, because it's all been so fast-paced and people have just been go, go, go. So, but the hard thing is that when you're doing that and you're trying to make something real, and we were talking about this before, is these... it's, you know, there's a payoff, or there's, you sacrifice something, you give up something, and that's the quick volume. And businesses need the revenue to exist, to continue to grow. And if you're a purpose-driven business, you ultimately need money to be able to enact your purpose. And so there's that balance there that you have to get right.
Is that in the middle of your kind of co-founder story? Do you hold one another accountable to that, those values and that belief? Or do you feel inclined to stray and then come back to it?
I think the founder relationship has been a really interesting one. And I know it's always a big topic with if there are co-founders of a business. And I think we're respectful of each other's views, but aligned really where it matters. And we've been the whole concept, and really I bring more the sort of idea around originality of what the category needs and how to build real confidence, and this whole empowerment piece of how I see, you know, the culture of drinking changing and how people can feel like that freedom and like find their original free spirit themselves to get more meaningful from their life, where Bill, he's from Scotland and very proud, like pretty much every Scot, to be from Scotland, and that heritage and history of distillation in Scotland's just respected around the whole world. And Bill felt very passionately about trying to create something distilled in Scotland. And this sort of, as this category was starting to emerge, and was asking himself questions about, you know, his relationship with alcohol, then there's a great opportunity to actually start to pioneer and to modernize and contemporize a message that, you know, Scotland's been known for a very long time. So I think that's a combination of like Scotland and this heritage and originality and confidence of what an alcohol free drink can be. So.
And how long have you been working together?
About 4.5 years now.
And when did you expand your team? When did you say there's four of you now?
So there's four full time, and we have a sort of a team. We've got some, developed some good relationships with some good partners and agencies as well. But so it was Bill and I for about 2.5 years. And
then what was the first role that you hired after that?
Sales in Scotland. So having our like, building the Scottish castle, you know, we called it, has been sort of really important because it's got a, like a, I think a Scottish brand has to be loved and used in Scotland. And so, you know, we've got, after 3.5 years now of working in the Scottish market, we're in almost every Michelin star restaurant up there. We've got 300 fantastic bars, restaurants, hotels, serving Ferragaya, and you know, we're regularly at events doing tastings. So it's great independent retailers up there as well. So, and we're really proud of that. And again, it's like this foundation stone that we're building that's hard to establish, but hopefully long term is really worthwhile. And so we had a Scottish ambassador to start with, and then we've added on a head of marketing as well, which marketing, you need marketing and sales together, as you know. And but there's, it's, yeah, the life of a founder or like anyone in a small business, mm-hmm. there's, you just feel you're just pulled from one thing to another, and you trying to achieve and to get as far as you possibly can. And I'm trying to get everyone as focused as possible on the jobs that I need to do, because there's so much to distract you. Mm-hmm. And now I find the moments when I'm not working, such like satisfaction out of like cooking, for example, where I can actually make something from start to finish and see it completed. I think there's a sort of deeper yeah. anxiety that I can't see anything completed because I don't know what's happening. You're chucking all this time and energy and these ideas and work into this concept and this business. But it takes a long time, as I said, longer than you ever anticipated for it to come out the other side. And
yeah, I think that's a really important thing to acknowledge, the madness of any kind of industry like this, where, well, I remember working in some kind of pharmaceutical, which seems really random, but there were researchers trying to develop something for a disease who would never see their work come to fruition in their yeah. lifetime. And I just remember sitting in that going, I'm not sure I could do it.
Yeah.
Because I'm goals orientated, and that's a special kind of commitment. So
it's like planting a tree.
Yeah.
You're never going to see that thing sort of like 100 years later or 50 years later. And yeah, I mean, you're planting it for the next generation. Yeah. But obviously that's a slightly extreme situation. I hope that we can see some sort of, some sort of sense of completion at some stage in my life with Ferragaya.
Yes, you definitely will. That is it. But it's learning how to wrangle that. Or I think there's something in learning to see the stepping stone in achievements. But but the problem is, if you're always thinking of the next and the next and the next, sometimes you can amble past those, can't you?
Yeah, we're always trying to sort of identify and have a pause when we do get victories and wins, because mm-hmm. these are the things that, you know, are the closest things to validation or sense of achievement, or mm-hmm. That we are progressing. And because otherwise you don't get it. You continue to go and you're like, how long until we need to hit like profitability and all this stuff, mm-hmm. because there's always far bigger fish to fry than even if it's a really positive short-term like victory.
off mic we talked about that, the wrangle of a passion project, something you that you has got your heart really, and how you marry that with the need to make it business and the head part. How do you bring those together?
I think with any entrepreneurial sort of founder led business, there's always going to be a sense of you in there, and trying not to get too emotional about things is probably quite key. And I've learned that because it is like a deeply personal in the way, because you know, if you're really passionate about it, you're putting, it's like a artist or whatever, putting something out there to for the world to see. You don't really know how people are going to interact with it, and especially when it's something, you know, that 3.5 years ago was really abstract, which is, you know, that Scottish alcohol-free spirit that doesn't taste like an alcohol, that isn't trying to, you know, be like alcohol. So all of these things, it's sort of, what is it sort of thing? Putting something out there and actually trying to detach yourself from it is a very helpful thing. But it's taken me some time to do that.
Have you achieved it, do you think?
I don't think I'll ever achieve it, no. But there's definitely, there's stuff that I do take the emotion out of, because you've got to desensitizing some of it, making it just like this is business.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's you know, this sort of like sense of more survival. It's quite useful.
Is there anything you wish you'd known sooner? Any kind of light bulb moment or key learning over the last couple of years?
I think the timing thing and the optimism that I'm always bringing to any meeting that we have when the board meets, you know, what we can do, the level that we can hit, like all of these, it's tempering, it's having that optimism. And obviously that's such a big driver, but then that sort of emotional bit of like, actually, you know, if it's taking longer and it is harder and you're not progressing, it's not to beat yourself up too much about that, especially in the world today with the amount of consumer brands, you know, and the way that the consumer, the buyer, like shopping behavior is changing, like influencer marketing, partnerships, all of these things, like Facebook adverts, just not the same as they were 6 months ago, let alone a year ago. And it's like, it's just such a fast changing landscape. And in terms of some of the things that, I mean, marketing has been tricky because it's the intangible side of it. And there's always the risk of you don't quite know what the return is. And if you do have your limited resource, or you know, you don't have the weight of a blue chip Diageo, Pernod Ricard, Bacardi behind you, you know, it's deliberating where, because you need to invest to grow. But it's very easy to fall into potholes and get really badly burnt. And that's definitely happened a couple of times. Thankfully not that badly burnt, but still it's, you look back on certain things and you think, oh God, I wish I spent that in a different way.
It's always the way, isn't it? Yeah. And you think, why didn't I spot that sooner? Why didn't, yeah, how did we think that was the right thing? A, you can only know when you know. And B, as you say, it's often, especially in where we're at the moment, things can have changed by the time you get to that point anyway.
I'm always amazed. I think the human's ability to be able to justify a bad situation. So whenever anything bad happens, it's like you're working out, okay, like how can I make that good in my mind? It's like, okay, I've achieved that, so now I can move on. I think that I always find that quite funny when, you know, when actually, you know, it's not great, and just you're rapidly just trying to justify it in your mind, just making it right so then you can move on.
But everyone, yeah, I mean, across all, anything you read about entrepreneurs, you know, the significance of failure in getting there, isn't there that thing that, if you're going for investment, that people won't invest in your first business. They want you to have like failed 4 times before they properly back you.
Yeah. And I think that there's so much truth in that. I don't know how many failed businesses I've had. I've had a few.
Have you?
Yeah. But nothing.
In similar category or in different things?
Different. I was never particularly academic at school. And I think I struggled a little bit with that. And I was trying to find something that I could be good at. And I was always like better at art or sort of being a bit more creative. I think at a young age, I managed to find a couple of quite questionable small businesses. that I used to do. And I think I formed a bit of an identity or a safe space around this entrepreneurial sort of identity. But then that took me to university and I did a clothing brand. It was like it's called Scruff, and it was a mimic of Tom's, basically Tom's espadrilles, but half the price. That didn't work, dealing with Chinese manufacturers and minimum order quantities and multiple sizes. Shoes are a complete nightmare if you're working on a
really
small, but they all came in size 8, like 3,000 pairs. my savings gone. But yeah, that was there's definitely learnings I've had, but I'm not sure if I'm at 4. This is obviously not going to be a fourth.
No, but you have done it before. It is not your first rodeo. You have failed and you have, and I think that is really important, is it?
Because yeah, I think it is. And you become more familiar with the emotions of it. And it's that sort of self-motivation piece of no one else is going to do it, so you've got to do it. And even if it's like some really tough legal document that you've got to read through that just sends chills down your spine, you just know in your mind that no one else is going to do it, so you just got to step up and try and work it out. And it's, that's the whole bit of, like, it's like doing an MBA on like steroids, starting your own businesses. You just got to plow into stuff that you have really very little understanding of and trying to make sense of it and make a decision on it that's going to be the best for your business, because it's, and so you can't help but having to like try and commit it. And I can get into it, but I'd far rather work on the really exciting sort of sales leads or marketing campaigns that we're working on. And you can't help, you have to do that.
Yeah, it's difficult, isn't it? Like, it's fairly at odds with the entrepreneurial spirit. Everyone that I've spoken to who had the vision, had the light bulb moment, who had the optimism and the energy to bring something to market, maybe doesn't want to drill into the numbers and the, and it's like, how do you learn to wrangle those two things? Because it's very difficult to keep hold of the bit that you love. It comes back to that, turning a passion project into a business.
I'm sure there's never, there's never a moment where you think like, yes, I've arrived and this is great. I sometimes think, if we had a bigger team, so someone, who was fantastic with digital or fantastic with finance, legal, etc., you can have great minds feeding into the sort of the ultimate journey, the overall journey. But I'm sure with scale and size comes pressures. But that's definitely something that, when you see work with people who are really, one, really passionate, have great belief in what it is they're working in, and also they just have that sort of experience. It's amazing what that can do with your, like, when you see that happening with your business. It's such a the business that you started, it's such a exciting sort of like light bulb moment. But we've got a small team, and so there's still a lot that Bill and I do that we're probably not built to do. So hopefully in time we'll be able to fill a couple of those roles with those types of people.
It's a different category or thing entirely, but Anna Mather, who is in my sphere in parenting, and she's a psychotherapist, and she says with parenting, when there's bits that you're like, oh, this is awful, she's like, she reframes it as, I get to do this. So it's the very thing of, I'm folding 3 lots of clothes and trying to see the thing that you're doing. It's like, once upon a time this was my dream to have 3 little loads of clothes to fold. I'm looking at some boring data, but I actually get to do this for my business, and just remembering to come back. And I love that.
I look at that. There's a poet that I love called David White. He's an Irish poet, and he's got a line that, without reciting the whole poem, but it's, you're never more brilliant than in your wish to find a way. And it's that struggle when you feel like, I really don't want to be doing this, or this is hard. It's, that's when you're being forced to be your best. And that's it. You're using your instincts and everything that you've learned along the way to get there. And that always gives me comfort if, you're having a tough time. It's like, this is when it's good. It's sort of a challenging way to put it. But it sort of sharpens you up and makes you dust yourself off and just get on with it.
Yeah, because like you say, no one's going to do it. Like, exactly like parenting. They've spilled milk all over the floor. You're like, oh, where's the person? Oh no, it's me. I'm gonna clear it up, and it will be fine. And yeah, I'm gonna sort my, you know, get my way through this business.
It's almost as it's happening. You're like, well, that's, there's no question. Yeah, I'm already down there. I've got my hand on the mop, and but you become quite efficient in that. But then you can become a bit resentful. It's like, why the hell am I having to do all this stuff?
Yes. Yeah. I think it's any task where you're spinning a lot of plates and there's a lot of things, and some of them aren't the bit that you signed up for or you imagined, but all of them add up to the big picture of the thing that you've started.
Yeah. I think a hard thing is letting stuff go. Like, for a period of my life, I felt like I could do most of the things that were I wanted to do in terms of my to-do list, my work, things in my personal life. Now I just have to let it run. And, you know, I know the urgent things come to the top and I get those sorted. But it's quite an uneasy feeling of letting all that stuff go. And definitely in the last year, there's stuff that for the first time in my life, I'm just like, I needed to do that, but I can't. It's gone.
Yeah. But it's so interesting, actually, the things, again, we talk a lot about, of all the balls, which ball can you drop and it will bounce rather than smash? And it's so often, actually, the one that you would once have really tried to keep going, and you actually leave it. And you're like, oh,
yeah,
you didn't need me quite as much as, I wasn't needed as much in that situation, and it was all right.
Yeah, yeah. And that's another great sort of lesson that I'm definitely not, I haven't learned it yet, but I can see certain things that you do leave that you were worried about. And yeah, as you say, just what wasn't important.
It's a really fascinating journey of where you put your resources. Yeah.
And what an art, like, if you can get there and you can just identify out of like 50 things that come in, three things that you need to do, and the rest of it you can just let go. I'm so far off that.
Yeah, exactly. Send me, give me your information when you've got it.
Yeah.
Couple of questions to end. I always ask a tricky one, but an interesting one. If you could have any other brand or product, if you could have founded any one, what would it be and why?
I think it's probably a little bit of a cliche now, but I'm sort of constantly inspired by Yvon Chouinard and Patagonia and what they're able to enact through the size of their business. It's like, whether it's saving a rainforest in Tasmania, or I think they've recently established a national park, Wild Rivers National Park. It's like, what an amazing legacy to leave. And I know that he's just, all of the companies left to nature. I mean, if we had a number of, probably a handful of companies that had that sort of level of influence that did that, the world would start to change in a really like positive way.
And also, when you speak like that, it's suddenly all to play for, isn't it? It's so exciting. And yes, it feels like huge goals, but yeah, why not?
Yeah, but if everyone's working towards that, and you know, our brand's quite set in Wild Earth and protecting us, wild places. But you know, we really stand up about community and in our local community in Fife, bringing work and opportunity and more tourism there as well through our distillery. But if you're able to really sort of see that change and enact it, it's a great reason to get out of bed in the morning. God, there's no better reason than my book.
And my last question, which is a personal one, but how I end all my podcasts, if you were to have an honest conversation with one person, who would it be and what would you say?
I don't know, the first person that just came into my mind, but it's only just because I've watched, it's very much sticking on the theme of what you might predict, David Attenborough with... like, one, how connected he must feel with knowledge. I'd just love to get to a great understanding of that. But then the frank truth of where he sees it going. I'm just always like bowled over by what that guy's done. Wild Isles, just completely fixated on it, like I was when I was a kid, when I... you know, watching all these things, which is probably why I'm doing what I'm doing now. That's not particularly predictable, the David Attenborough combo.
No, it's not, because it shows that your head and your heart are in the place where you're meant to be.
Well, yeah. We talk about focus. So it's just, you know, just try and keep make things easier for yourself if you focus in.
The problem is, if you did meet, if one did meet David Attenborough, you'd be so dumbstruck, wouldn't you? Mm. Oh, you'd just
where
be,
to start?
Yeah, you just. I think I just want to touch him.
Yeah, yeah.
And then
just feel the aura.
Yeah. Oh, I can't bear it. Like whenever there's a BBC notification, there's always a, like, don't let it be David Attenborough. What will we do?
Horrible. Don't want to think.
No, let's just appreciate all that he's done.
Exactly.
As we get towards the end, I realise I haven't asked you what it tastes like.
Yes. Key. So Ferragaya, as I've said, is an original taste. So it's got a refreshing depth of flavour. A lot of alcohol-free drinks or alcohol alternatives are either just quite sweet or they're like floral, herbaceous, and they potentially lack a little bit of punch. And so what we wanted to do when we approached the challenge of creating Ferragaya was to flip it on its head and get something with depth and also a bit of a journey sort of through the flavors. And so we've got land botanicals, sea botanicals, and spice botanicals, and it comes in that order. So, you know, these are all like wild earth botanicals that have, you know, we've really focused in on botanicals that give either sort of good antioxidants or good calming, because I think, you know, that encourages that whole experience. But it's the land botanicals are quite herbaceous and citrusy. So we've got lemon, verbena, blackcurrant leaf, chamomile, bay. Sea botanical is a sugar kelp, and that's grown on the west coast of Scotland on our own seaweed line, which is great sequestering carbon, and it's really interesting sort of pioneering food source. And then the spice, you know, which we sadly doesn't really grow in Scotland, is we responsibly source it and from Europe. And so we've got some pink peppercorn and cayenne pepper, which really gives the sort of foundation of the taste. And so because you've got that depth, it makes a really great versatile basis on which to build with like mixed drinks. So if you just want a simple like ginger ale, which we call like wild ginger, Ferragaya ginger ale tonic. And then if you're feeling more creative or you're in like a bar, restaurant, etc., then cocktails are great. So whether it's Paloma, Old Fashions, Brambles, makes a really good sour, you know, where you can really start to step up the alcohol-free element of that. So, but the flavor is already designed. You've got to challenge the palate just enough so people, drinkers, slow down, take their time. And in doing so, they actually enter that headspace of having a drink. It's not about whether there's alcohol in it. It's about really the time you take over it. So that flavor journey and the way that we've put it together is really just angling and trying to create that, the time and being a drink.
I love that. You've done a very good pitch for it there. You've got me completely.
I'll try my best.
And tell us where it's stocked, importantly.
So we're stocked largely in, well, we've got some international markets now. So we're just opening up in the US, in Canada, Switzerland, and we've got a few other leads opening up, which is exciting. But in the UK, our real home market is Scotland. And so we're in some really great locations up there. I don't know, Edinburgh and Glasgow really being the hub, too many to list, but on the website there is a stockist map. And then in London, we're sort of some really iconic retailers like Selfridges, Harrods, Harvey Nichols, Daylesford, recently on Ocado. And so we've got some of those really nice iconic retailers on board, which is really helpful. And I don't know, some really great restaurants and bars that sell some good Ferragaya cocktails. We've got Fallow, which is in St. James, and also Wild by Tart in Belgravia does order the tart spritz. It's got some seasonal sort of amendments to the cocktail, which is fantastic.
It must have been amazing the first time we saw it in one of those iconic food halls.
Yeah, actually there's one, there's this Donovan Bar at Brown's Hotel, which is one of the world's most famous bars. Used to be like Arthur Conan Doyle's like hangout where he wrote Sherlock Holmes. And I remember my grandmother used to say that she used to go there when she was like growing up, and it was like a big treat, and her father once took her. And there was, and Ferragaya is now has a cocktail on the menu there. It costs, I mean, it's a reassuringly priced cocktail, but it's smoked with the same tobacco smoke that Arthur Conan Doyle smoked. And it's got this, it's an old fashioned, and it's just an incredible cocktail. But that was a real moment of, yeah. And I, you know, my granny hung around long enough for me to tell her that. So I think she was proud. But I definitely felt a little bit emotional at that.
Yeah, that's big.
Yeah.
That's big.
Yeah.
It's exciting.
It is. Yeah. I feel yeah, really excited for the next couple of years.
Yeah, you've, as you say, it sounds to me as if you've put all the groundwork in.
Now it's time to grow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I hope so. Thank you. And that's another episode wrapped. Thank you so much for listening to Meet the Founder, part of But Why podcast. It's so easy to forget the humans behind the products that fill our shelves and phones. But I love being reminded that every brand began with a person having a great idea. These chats are about more than me being nosy, although that is a big part of it. It's about remembering the reality that success isn't linear and that being a founder doesn't take one shape. Thank you so much to my guests and thank you for listening. And just one more ask, if you could please leave us a review or shout about it on social media, it makes a huge difference to the number of listens we get. And last but not least, if you do want to get in touch, and I always love hearing from you, you can email me on butwhy@clemmytelford.com or find us at butwhypodcast on Instagram. Wishing you a very excellent day and catch you next time.